Blog Talk Radio.
Take my love, take my land, take me where I cannot stand. I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. There's no place I can be since I found serenity. You can't take the sky from me.
Good evening. You are live with Tex and Rex. Irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. I'm your host, Rex, broadcasting to you from Boston, near the downtown area where there's an interesting bar called the Bull and Finch, which you may be familiar with from the TV show Cheers.
And this is Tex broadcasting from Houston, high above Houston, the Crystal Cathedral, as always. And Rex, what is on the agenda for today?
Well, what's on the agenda for today is apparently this fiscal cliff. Now, I'm not really sure I know what this thing is. I'm not sure anybody knows what this thing is, but it seems to be all that we're talking about. It seems to be the present game of the duopoly. The only cliff that I remember, and I don't know if you remember this text, Cliff Clavin, right? He was the government employee. He was a mailman who was in Cheers Bar, sat next to Norm every night. And Cliff was kind of a know-it-all, you know? He knew something about everything. And in reality, Cliff was a fucking idiot. He didn't know anything. And every time I try to do some research about this fiscal cliff, I keep running into Cliff Clavin, and most of these Cliff Clavins are elected idiots who seem to talk about everything as expert and don't know their ass from a hole in the wall. Is that what you're finding?
Yeah, pretty much. And basically, behind the scenes, from what I can tell, the GOP is in full surrender, and you know, only the sort of old line Republican Tea Party people who believe in the Republican Party of Reagan still seem to be clueless as to what's actually happened.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm starting to think that this party of Reagan is a mythological construct or a legend from days gone past. I guess if I wasn't alive when it was going on, I wouldn't believe it. But this current GOP is insane. Now, I will say something. You know, Newt Gingrich, back in the day, you know, had similar discussions in a similar, quote, fiscal cliff battle with a very powerful and popular Democratic liberal president, and he straightened him out pretty good. But this time around, the duopoly seems to be so much in charge that we've got this alleged battle between, you know, the fiscally conservative Republicans and the spendthrift but well-meaning Democrats. And the truth of the matter is they're already in agreement. They're just playing this up through Christmas to make you think that they're doing some kind of battle, and then they're just going to drop at the last minute the deal that they probably had before the election. I mean, you know, didn't Romney have lunch with Obama this week, Tex?
Yeah, and actually – that sort of leads into something that I wanted to talk about that I think will be very illuminating for the listeners as to the true nature of the Republican Party.
Illuminating or Illuminati?
Yeah, exactly. The current true nature of the Republican Party. So earlier this week, well, within the week since we broadcast last, there was an editorial in the Washington Post by Stuart Stevens, who is the chief strategist for the Romney campaign. And this is on the 28th. It's called Mitt Romney, A Good Man, The Right Fight. And there's a lot of interesting things here, which if you sort of weave together, you can kind of figure out what's going on. So what he says is, and I quote, "I appreciate that Mitt Romney was never a favorite of the D.C.'s green room crowd or, frankly, of many politicians." Okay, well, so this statement, green room, is something that usually happens off stage, so that's the room you go to change clothes and everything before you go up onto stage to perform. So by this, I would assume the green room that we're talking about here would be the media. So the media never liked Mitt Romney. From what I could tell, Mitt Romney was being hyped by the media, the conservative media, from day one as the inevitable, most electable nominee. And even the Democrats adopted this narrative. You know why? Because they wanted to run against him because he basically was the easiest one to defeat. And then he says, frankly, of many politicians. Okay, well, most of those politicians in the Republican Party are in leadership positions, and this was their guy, the one that they wanted. Now, there were conservatives, but as we'll get into, they were sidelined. So he continues and says, that's why a year ago, so few of those people thought he would win the Republican Party nomination. Well, that's not true either. They were pumping him up as the most inevitable, most electable. And then he says, but that was indicative not of any failing of Romney's, but how out of touch so many were in Washington and the professional political class. Well, yes, you were out of touch. You just were out of touch the other way. You thought he was electable, and you kept telling people that, so much so that you demoralized the Republican base and made them file in to go vote for your rhino for another loss. And then he said, nobody liked Romney except voters. Well, that's just factually incorrect.
Sorry, that's funny. Which voters? Did Karl Rove get the vote?
Yeah, this paper gets an F, okay? So it says that he went on, best of his competition debates and all this kind of stuff, whatever he did. And then he said, in doing so, he raised more money for the Republican Party than the party did. Well, you know, as an engineer would say, there's your problem. So he had the money behind him the whole time, but never the people, never the voters. And he used that money to destroy candidates that were actually viable and liked by the party base. But because he had the most money, in Stuart Stevens' mind, this means that he's the best candidate. Then he goes on to say, he trounced Barack Obama in debates. I don't believe that for one second. I know the media pumped that story up, and people on the Republican side were so demoralized they thought, at last, there's a glimmer of hope. That was false hope that was being sold to you because he lost. And then he said he defended the free enterprise system and more than any other figure in recent history drew attention to the moral case for free enterprise and conservative economics. What? I didn't hear any of that. So he concludes in this he continues in this article to say that Romney brought the fight to the Democrats. I think we all remember how much fight he brought to the Democrats. I like cars. And he made rational, persuasive case for the entitlement reform that conservatives have so desperately needed. I love Costco. My wife buys me packs of shirts from Costco, and I like them. The nation listened and talked about it, and on Election Day, Romney carried seniors by a wide margin. It's safe to say that the entitlement discussion will never be the same. Okay, let's talk about the concept of entitlement. Entitlement is believing that something has belonged to you just by sheer, you know, your existence. Because I exist, I am entitled to receive these things, right? And there always is question in history as to what you're actually entitled to. That's why we have, you know, a Declaration of Independence and a Bill of Rights and, you know, a Constitution that says we hold these truths to be self-evident. Well, if you wouldn't actually write them down, it's pretty clear that there's some question as to whether how evident they are. And that, of course, is the message being sent to England. That's why you have a Bill of Rights, because it's saying if you sign up to this, you are entitled to these things, which is you have these freedoms. And we've limited the scope of government, and if we didn't tell the government that it could do this in this document, it's not allowed to do it because the states are allowed to do it. So let's get to the sense of the entitlement. Some people seem to think that they're entitled to the presidency.
What?
Now, this comes
like
from...
Like a title of nobility?
Yeah, exactly. This comes from a very good article that I will revisit. later on, but this is from the American Thinker by J.T. Hatter, called Message to the GOP, Believe It or Not. And he says, how do you get to be a Republican presidential candidate? Well, there's a good question. There's three ways. Number one, it's your turn to be president, according to the GOP. Number two, you have fire in the belly for conservative principles, and the public falls in love with you. Or three, you want to be president and have the right family and political connection. Let's look at GOP presidential candidates and their reasons for running from office. Richard Nixon, reason for running, it's my turn. Gerald Ford, reason for running, oh shit, meaning, yeah, oh crap, I can't believe I'm running. Ronald Reagan, reason for running, I have a conservative vision and I strongly believe in America's founding principles. George H.W. Bush, reason for running, it's my turn. Bob Dole, reason for running, it's my turn. George W. Bush, reason for running, I want to be the president. John McCain, reason for running, it's my turn. Mitt Romney, reason for running for office, it's my turn and I want to be the president.
Oh, he had two.
Now, I would say, go ahead.
That he had two good reasons.
Yeah,
it's
he
turn,
had two of the good ones.
And he wants to be president. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's a step above only having one reason to be president.
That's right.
Plus,
unfortunately,
in Washington,
he didn't have the most important reason.
Well, I don't know, because, I mean, you know, Washington, D.C. used to be a swamp, and they drained it and turned into the federal district, and they have very nice trees here.
I love this state. It seems right here. Trees are the right height.
Sorry, continue.
Exactly. So this is part of the problem with the modern Republican Party and how it runs. And so they've decided that they're going to get down to the heart of the problem and try to solve all of this. As Haley Barbour said, they're going to have this big event in Las Vegas where they're going to figure out everything that went wrong, have a big colonoscopy, and figure out, you know, where things went off the rails. But here's a problem that you're going to face with that, which is...
Last time the party had a colonoscopy, they found Karl Rove's head.
Yeah, exactly what happened. So here's your problem. This is from Red State. This is Incestuous Bleeding in the Republican Party by Eric Erickson. And this talks about what actually was going on the inside of the Romney campaign. So... the nexus of the Republican Party establishment, basically the people who screwed you over and continue to screw over Tea Party people, is on 66 Canal Center Plaza in Alexandria, Virginia, and it's on the fifth floor. The fifth floor of 66 Canal Center Plaza reveals a tangled web of incestuous relationships among Republican consultants who have made millions, all the while the GOP went down the tubes. Here, the top party consultants wage war with conservative activists, and here they wage war with Democrats. On both fronts, they raked in millions of dollars along the way with a more fractured minor party. They raked in millions along the way with a more fractured minority party in their wake, and they show no signs of recognizing just how much a part of the problem they are. Now, I'm not going to go through every single linkage here, but you should understand that just down the hall from the fifth floor of 66 Canal Avenue, you have Suite 555, which holds the BlackRock Group, Crossroads Media, WWP Strategies, Target Point Consultants, and Americans for Job Security. Okay, all these groups, guess what? From Karl Rove's America Crossroads gave money to BlackRock Group and consultants to Crossroads Media. Okay, so it's tied into that. Then go down the hall to 501. It's no crime to be co-located because there's only so much office space, but you get to Suite 501, which contains the offices of Targeted Victory. Okay, so Michael Beach is co-founder of Targeted Victory. Before that, he was the National Victory Director for the Republican Party during the 2008 campaign. Okay, Targeted Victory LLC is registered in St. Paul, Minnesota. Its manager, who is the person who controls the day-to-day operations of the LLC, is Tony Feather. Tony Feather happens also to be the F in FLS Connect, which made millions off of both the Romney campaign and the RNC. The L in the FLS Connect is Jeff Larson, the president the present chief of staff of the Republican National Committee. So this is the L in FLS Connect, okay? Jeff Larson, who is the current chief of staff of the Republican National Committee. He's part of FLS Connect, which made millions off of Romney and the RNC, okay? So if you do a search, well, I'll skip that part. I don't want to bore you guys too much with the details. But when you come down to it, few people in the campaign want to talk about FLS Connect. One person I talked to said the group is commonly referred to as the FLS Mafia. FLS Connect seems to control the RNC and controlled Team Romney to a degree. FLS Connect was the phone vendor for Bush in 2000, Bush Cheney 2000, Bush Cheney 2004, McCain-Palin 2008. In 2008, the NRCC sent a hefty chunk of money to FLS Connect. So during the Bush era, they created something called Voter Vault, a database used to identify and mobilize voters to the poll. At some point, a partner at FLS Connect left the company and went to work for the RNC. His name is Richard Beeson. When Rich Beeson started working at the RNC, he sold the Voter Vault data to FLS Connect, so they now owned it, and then leased the data back to the RNC. So the RNC had a database which they sold to FLS Connect. FLS Connect leased it back. Okay, so the company who owns the data that's being leased to the RNC has as one of its chief partners the present chief of staff of the Republican National Committee. So this guy, the chief of staff, has the data and the RNC doesn't, and they have to lease it from him. Okay, I would say that's bad business. But Richard Beeson gave the RNC's phone vendor contract also to FLS Connect without bidding out to others. Richard Beeson moved from the RNC then to the Romney campaign, okay? And at this point, Targeted Victory enters the picture. Targeted Victory, their principal office, I won't worry about where they are, they're in Minnesota, which is the same place as FLS Connect. Okay, so Targeted Victory raked in millions in commissions. The central component to Rich Beeson's get-out-the-vote operation was Project Orca. And so that's how it all got involved in the beginning, why Project Orca was a failure. And so now here's the kicker and why I would bother you with all these, you know, sort of confusing connections, is that the person charged now with figuring out what happened wrong with the Republican Party, with the Romney campaign, and why the RNC did not win, the person in charge of that is Larson, the guy who was screwing the party over left and right. So at the end of the day, when they come up with their, you know, outcome as to why the party lost, you can bet that Jeff Larson and all those consulting groups will never get the blame because they're in charge of the investigation. Kind of interesting.
Very interesting. It sounds very much like a an episode of The Sopranos. And what is this wonderful technology that they screwed up?
It was called Orca, and it's supposed to be good for something called GoTV, get out the vote. And apparently, if we had had better technology with the Republican GoTV effort, we completely would have won, not if we had conservative values.
I see. Well, I think we have a technology expert who commented on the efficacy of the Orca technology.
Don't be too proud of this technological terror you've constructed.
Ooh. Apparently the number two man in the Empire is displeased with Orca.
Yeah, Orca, it doesn't seem like it works. I don't know. I don't want that guy to force choke me or anything, but yeah, I agree with that guy. I don't think the problem is Orca. You know, I'll just tell you that straight out.
No, I'm pretty sure the problem is that the elite of the Republican Party have no idea what a conservative is, and then they keep pandering to conservatives, and then they turn around and just hand everything that the liberals could possibly want because it's one big corporatist family, and that leaves most of us conservatives running around going, you know,
this can't be happening, man. This isn't happening.
Oh, it's happening. It is absolutely
happening. Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, there's another article I was reading where someone talked about how to design the perfect application and what you would need for a good GoTV effort, right? Now the party is going to design a killer app? You know what I mean? Like, this is how stupid your leadership is, our leadership. Well, it's not our leadership, and that's becoming increasingly clear because the voices of insurgency within the party are rising.
But we have a killer app.
Go ahead.
We have a killer app. The Republican Party has an amazing killer app. In fact, it was such a powerful killer app, it shut down the government in 1995. That app is Speaker Newt Gingrich. Now, which one of these
Absolutely.
Moron Republicans talking about this, quote, fiscal cliff, have you seen show half the balls that Newt did back when he was Speaker of the House? Any of them, other than possibly Rand Paul?
None of them. And, you know, I know where you're going, and I want to give you a little bit of setup here and just conclude with this Stuart Stevens thing, Stuart Stevens being chief strategist for the Romney presidential candidate campaign, who basically is writing his excuse and exonerating himself in the process. So when he gets down to the solution, he says there was a time not so long ago when the problems of the Democratic Party revolved around being too liberal and too dependent on minorities. Obama turned those problems into advantages. Okay, so if you read between the lines, what they're saying is that the way to win in the future for the Republican Party is going to become more liberal. Okay, so this is what the Stuart Stevens of the party are saying. And he goes on, he concludes that Romney did a great job, and Republican ideals, Mitt Romney carried the day. Okay, well, he lost, so he didn't carry the day, but he was talking about the debates. But the interesting thing is he said Republican ideals. He didn't talk about conservative ideals because he wants the Republican Party to become a liberal party. And you're seeing this happen now in the talks with the fiscal cliff. The GOP is already sold out. It's just sort of the party loyalists haven't figured it out.
Become right, a right? liberal party? Become a liberal party?
Yeah.
My. They did that quite some time ago. In fact, I would argue that they've done it a very long time ago. But even if you weren't aware of it, if you didn't notice that they were already a liberal party this past May, you're fucking blind. Because what they did to Gingrich and Paul and propped up this insipid loser Romney, who had an interesting lunch with the president this week, then you know, you missed the boat. And this whole fiscal cliff thing, I mean, it's laughable. I mean, you know, let's try to break it down. At the beginning of the show, I talked about, you know, Cliff Clavins and their being, you know, experts at everything and not knowing anything. And, you know, I said I couldn't put my finger on what this fiscal cliff is. Apparently, the fiscal cliff is that if Congress does not act, imagine that, Congress going in there and not acting. But if they do not act, then on December 31st, the, quote, Bush tax cuts will expire. And the, what are they, the sequester, automatic cuts across the board will go into effect. Okay,
yeah,
that's apparently the, yeah, sequestration. That's apparently the, what they're talking about is a fiscal cliff. Well, let's just think about this for a minute. 2001, right? That's when we got these, quote, Bush tax cuts with the sunset provision,
yeah,
which was
that's correct.
And there was a sunset provision, and the 2 years ago they had a whole, you know, debate about it, and they extended them for two more years. Well, if I'm not mistaken, from 2001 until 2006, so that's a good five-year run, right? You had the compassionate conservative president, right? And you had, quote, conservative Republican control of both houses. Am I correct, Tex?
Absolutely.
So why the hell did they put sunset provisions in for tax cuts if they're so fucking conservative? I mean, why would you give someone a tax cut in order to only have it expire at some point in the future unless you do something to extend it? Why not just make it the new tax rate? You had, the Republicans love to yell at Obama for saying, in the first 2 years he had both houses and he didn't da-da-da-da-da. Well, guess what? You had it for 5 years with George Bush, and you gave us these, quote, tax cuts that expire. And now you're bitching about the fact that they're going to expire again. Why don't you make them permanent in the first place if you're so conservative? That's what I want to know.
Because they're tacticians. Because the idea was they set them to expire before the election. And so they were going to make it an election day issue. And they were going to run on it. Because the point is they don't actually care about the tax cuts. They only care about playing political football with your paycheck.
Mm-hmm. Now, just so that all of you who are listening are, you know, you're thinking that this is potentially just a tax hike on, quote, the rich or the millionaires and billionaires. In fact, I'm still baffled by this these days. We dump millionaires and billionaires together. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm not really good at math. But if I'm not mistaken, a billionaire is an order of magnitude of 1,000 times greater than a millionaire. Am I correct?
Yes, that would be like lumping together a guy who has $1,000 with a millionaire.
Wow, okay. Or like lumping a rickshaw together with like, oh, I don't know, a battle, you know, an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's so ludicrous.
I live in a hut made of dung. Well, I live in a...
I own the Empire State Building.
Yeah, exactly. Well, but you're the same.
But you both own a building.
Yeah.
It's nuts, okay? So first of all, if they do not act, okay, everybody's tax rate is going up, okay? Everybody's is going up because you're going to lose the 10% rate, and then every other rate is going to get bumped up. And everybody goes, well, what's it going to get bumped up from? Well, if it's only going to go to, you know, from 35%, the Bush tax cut, to 39.6%, the top Clinton rate, well, you know, that's only, what, 4.6%? What's the big deal? No, it's not 4.6%. Okay, that is a 12.5% increase in taxation rates. Not to mention that from 2001 to today, if you account for the devaluation of a dollar, because you've printed so many dollars, you've pushed that many more people into that next tax bracket. So it's more like a 25 to 30% tax hike when you factor in inflation. Now, here's the thing, right? We're allegedly in an economic recovery, right? We've all heard this. It's a tepid recovery, but it's a recovery nonetheless. If you raise taxes on everybody, A, there's less money floating around in the economy, but if you raise it especially on, quote, the wealthy millionaires and billionaires, you dry up capital, and without capital, you have no growth. Without growth, you have no jobs. Funny how that works. It's almost as if these guys are engineering a reversal of the, quote, recovery that they're telling us we have, which we really don't have, but, you know, I'm just going with their verbiage.
Well,
it's insane. Go ahead.
But, Rex, the important thing is that we have Republicans in Washington who are going to protect us from this. Now, this is something regarding Saxby Chambliss from Georgia. And this regards Grover Norquist. And all of Washington is a Twitter and gleeful that they believe they have reached the end of the no tax increase pledge of Grover Norquist and that era is over. And now they have Republicans, you know, happily going along with tax increases and having bought into the philosophy whole cloth, right? And sadly, let's see what our leaders are doing, okay? So Saxby Chambliss says that he does not care about a 20-year-old pledge that he signed. He's talking about the Americans for Tax Reform pledge that says he pledges not to raise taxes. He has clarified his remarks to mean he wants tax reform that increases revenue through job growth. Okay, anytime you clarify your remarks, what that means is, uh-oh, I said what I actually meant the first time, but I better say something different because I'm getting criticized. But everyone knows that Saxby meant he was happy to raise taxes. Now, under pressure back home, he is waffling. He covers the seat in Washington and is fearful of being primaried. Georgia has runoff primaries, which means he can be taken out. Behind the scenes, we all know he will work to structure a proposal that increases taxes on Americans, but he'll cleverly make sure there are enough votes so that he can vote against it. He is active and has been actively complicit with Mark Warner, Democrat of Virginia, and others on raising taxes. In the 17 years Saxby Chambliss has been in Congress, expenditures have outpaced revenues in all but four of those years. Thank you, Newt Gingrich. Those years happen to be during the Clinton Gingrich years, the height of the dot-com bubble, da-da-da-da-da. Okay, so there was a Tea Party, but he cares about us, right? So there was a Tea Party rally going on as our mutual friend sat in the office waiting for Saxby. His staff stood around ridiculing the Tea Party activists going by as simpletons, uneducated hicks, and nuts. Chambliss himself has been overheard talking disparagingly of Tea Party activists in the Capitol Hill Club and elsewhere. He has become an entrenched in Washington, D.C., and thinks we are here in Georgia. We here in Georgia are the problem, not him. In 2005, he was convinced that we here in Georgia were the problem on immigration. Since then, he's been convinced that we here in Georgia are the problem by not sending enough money to Washington, D.C. So that's what our leadership is doing. So what are we going to do? Okay, so this comes down to Romney's lunch. So I'm just going to say this is something that is coming again from that J.T. Hatter article, which says, the Republicans roll over and play dead, can't criticize Democrats or the mainstream media will call us racist who call us racist homophobes and sexist bigots. Instead of fighting the slander, the GOP has decided to transform itself into the socialist light party to get more people into the bigger tent. They want to give away Obama phones too. Bread and circuses win elections, they think. But what the American people really want is someone they can say they believe in and follow, someone like Ronald Reagan. The GOP has expressed exactly zero interest in restoring the U.S. as the most prosperous, generous, fair, and religious nation in the history of the world, zero interest in returning to the days of balanced budgets, limited government, and the free enterprise system. Have you heard anyone in the GOP talk about this? That's all we want the GOP to do. But the GOP doesn't see the situation the way we do. The GOP desperately wants to continue feeding and slopping at the money and power trough in Washington, and will do anything to protect this privilege, even transform itself into the Democratic Party. And this, Rex, will get you to Mitt Romney's lunch with Barack Obama. Because among the other reasons that he went, they said, is it will help Romney stay relevant. And
who?
As David Graham at The Atlantic said, Romney might even come out of this meeting with a job. Obama, quote, could make a bipartisan gesture by appointing Romney to be Commerce Secretary, Treasury Secretary, or first to fill a business secretary slot that Obama offhandedly suggested late in the campaign. So see, this is what your rhinos are getting you. You have a candidate who is so ideologically in agreement with Obama that he could easily, and others could see him easily, serving in the administration of Obama. What could be better? Would you be happy if Romney served with Obama?
Well, there was no official position open, but they did pledge to stay in touch after they munched on some white turkey chili, whatever the hell that is.
Yeah, what the hell is white turkey chili? Like,
I don't know, man, but it sounds disgusting. Eat some real food, you fucking pussies.
I know who a white turkey is. Freaking Romney.
Romney's a white turkey. yeah, a Mexican white turkey. But look, I mean, the thing that's insane about I don't even know where to go with all the stuff you just said. These people constantly maneuver and pander to, quote, seem like conservatives, while behind the scenes they are nothing but corporatists and thieves. And you were talking about entitlements earlier. The only entitlement that exists in Washington is that all of these guys think they are entitled to every single thing that you have, and they merely get together to decide how much of it they allow you to keep. And once you understand that that's their mentality, because they're corporatist thieves, then you'll understand these conversations, because we're not talking about tax increases or spending cuts. They are talking about not spending as much as they were planning on spending, just a little bit more than they're already spending now. And they're talking about increasing taxes, which is basically just confiscating more of your money. Very simple. Now, obviously, they're going to come to a compromise, which they've already come to. They're just playing it out for us in front of our eyes, where they'll pick some arbitrary number, 150, 200, 250,000, whatever, and allow a modest, quote, tax rate increase on those people. And the rest of us won't get a tax increase. Oh, well, except for, I don't know. There's this thing that's going online in January, the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act. That thing's got so many friggin' taxes in it. No, by the way, just before anybody tries to correct me and tell me that that's a health care bill, that's not a tax. What did Judge Roberts say, Tex, in his decision? About the individual
He said they could do it as a tax.
Oh, okay. So it is a tax.
Yeah.
So we got this fiscal cliff coming, and no one's talking about that particular tax increase.
Well, here's a sign, just to let everyone know that the debate is already over and your side lost. The entire conversation is about raising taxes on the, quote, millionaires and billionaires, and whether or not you'll raise taxes on people making $250,000 or over. And apparently Barack Obama, what he sent to John Boehner was such a kick in the nuts that it's not even $250,000, it's $200,000. Now, why would Obama do that? Is it because he thinks the negotiating position is so strong and John Boehner is a complete pushover wimp jerk face? Well, partly. But realistically, what he's trying to do is create an environment in which John Boehner's surrender will look like he actually got concessions out of Obama. So when Obama lowers the tax increases to kick in at $200,000, John Boehner can say, well, see, I negotiated that back to $250,000, and now he's got a feather in his cap.
That's fantastic. John Boehner is such a powerful negotiator.
Exactly. He's very effective. And notice how nobody is talking about how that they're going to actually cut Medicare or Medicaid or do something about the growth of entitlements. Everything is about whether or not John Boehner will agree to these tax increases or not, and the whole town already knows it. And as you saw Grover Norquist on CNBC, they almost were openly laughing at him and his no increase in tax pledge, which now everyone in Washington, including most Republicans, have already said they don't care about anymore. They're going to raise taxes, essentially. So it's already done. It's in the can. Everything, it's all over but the shouting, and we're going to go to the Kabuki Theater, and people are going to watch at home as if, you know, some dance was done and there was some great compromise, but at this point it's just a play, and the major action has already occurred.
Yeah, so the cliff has already been, we've already gone over the cliff. They're just, we're kind of suspended in the air like Wile E. Coyote. We haven't realized that we're actually about to fall. Speaking of cliffs, we've just gone over the 30-minute mark. There's about an hour and 20 minutes of show left. The call-in number is 646-649-1013. That's 646-649-1013. If you'd like to call in and talk about the fiscal cliff or Cliff Clavin or any of the other topics that we're addressing tonight, we'd be happy to chat with you.
Or the technological terror.
The technological terror is one frightening aspect. I mean, if Darth Vader is afraid of it and thinks that it's a failure, then that's, you know, that's a significant issue. Now, Tex, I think I have a clip of Boehner here talking about his position of strength vis-a-vis Obama. Would you like to hear that?
Yeah, actually, I want to hear some of the tough negotiating language that we're adopting in order to stand up for.
It's okay, Johnny. Johnny, it's okay. You won. No, no, you are the Speaker of the House. No, Obama's not that scary. No, you can stand up to him, Johnny. Calm down. I know Newt Gingrich is pissed. Don't worry about it. He's not coming back. It's just you and Obama. He's a nice guy. Calm down. No, actually, I think I... Sorry. John Boehner just tends to... He tends to cry a lot. I get him confused with that baby. You know, what am I going to do? You know, an interesting thing, I mean, other than crying, you know, John Boehner is known for his tanning, right? I mean, that's his specialty.
Yeah.
And according to Cliff Clavin, tanning was first made popular in the Bronze Age. I don't know if you're aware of that little fact. So apparently John Boehner is from the Bronze Age, and even in that entire period of time, he hasn't grown a pair. So here we go, though. I do actually have John Boehner's position on negotiating with Obama.
Mr. President, this is your moment. We're ready to be led.
That is tough. Wow.
Now what the fuck are we supposed to do? We're some real pretty shit now, man!
This is the guy? This is the third in line for the White House? This is Mr. Number One Republican? And his assertion is that he wants to be led by a guy who got 13% less votes than he did last time, has verifiably fucked up the whole country, and is planning on screwing it up even more, and that's what he says to him?
Well, that, he didn't finish the sentence. He's prepared to be led off a fiscal cliff. that was the other part. That was the part in parentheses that he didn't say, but that's what he meant. Yeah.
I don't.
You're going,
you know,
over.
I could
your
care
barrels,
less
of, everyone. We're going over the cliffs.
I could care less if John Boehner goes over the cliff. I could care less if he takes the Republican Party over the cliff. I don't want to go over the cliff. And I don't want my country to go over the cliff. And when we elect these people, we elect leaders to put forth an idea. Now, if you voted for Obama, or you supported Obama, or you happen to have the same ideological persuasion as Obama, then I understand that your intention is to redistribute the wealth,
tax everybody who makes more money than you, get as much free crap for not working as you can. So I disagree with that, but at least I know that's where they're coming from, and that's who they voted for. Those of us who vote conservative or held our noses, I'm not one, and voted for Mitt Romney, or those of us who reelected John Boehner and the people that voted for him into the House, we didn't vote for them to compromise or be led by the socialists. We voted for them to stand up for conservative principles. And this whole idea of bashing Grover Norquist's pledge, you know, because we don't like pledges. You know, remember what Mitt Romney said? I don't like contracts because then you have winners and losers, and, you know, it's uncomfortable and controversial. Well, you know, I remember we had a contract in 1994, right? There were 10 things that the Republicans were going to do if you gave them the first majority in 40 years. They got those done. We got balanced budgets, or as close to as we've seen in the last 60 years. Yeah, they voted on every one. We got tax cuts, right? We got entitlement reform. We got government cutbacks, or at least not as much increases. So that sounds like a conservative thing to me. So I don't see why we have to go back on our pledges, because if I'm not mistaken, if you're not willing to keep your word, then I guess I can't trust you to uphold your oath to defend the Constitution from enemies, foreign and domestic, either, which case you're invalid. You don't belong in office. It's time to get them out.
I mean, the thing is, at this point, the Republican Party really has, you know, jumped the shark. Jump the shark being a phrase which itself has almost jumped the shark. But they've kind of done themselves in this time, because the whole Rhino wing of the party basically grabbed control from the conservatives and said that you guys don't run this thing anymore. You can't win. You're out. We're taking over, you know, from stem to stern, this whole party, and you guys sit back, shut up, and we're going to lead you to victory. And they failed. And they mistreated everyone along the way in the process. And now they're in some real deep shit, because you might be able to get away with that if you won, but you're still going to have, you know, your comeuppance, a day of reckoning in the background. But if you lose, oh, my God, you can't do that kind of stuff and not succeed. As Napoleon said, if one says you're going to take Vienna, you better take Vienna. And you know what? They didn't freaking take Vienna. And now the people in Vienna are standing there like, yeah, so what are you doing here again? So something else. I mean, and this is just kind of to show that this goes beyond just this show, but this is really a major movement that I think everyone should start getting involved with at your local Republican Party, because now is the time to strike when the iron is hot. So this is from The American Thinker by Steve McCann, called The Governing Class and the Decline of America, and he concludes by saying the true nature of the GOP establishment's motivation has been exposed by their reaction to the Tea Party movement. This grassroots rebellion was the first manifestation of the awareness by a large portion of the American public of the nation's problems and ultimate consequences. Despite the overwhelming success of the Tea Party working within the Republican Party in the 2010 midterm elections, nearly all the Republican elites downplayed their success and fell in with the mainstream media and the Democrats in their well-worn and gratuitous aspersions against these concerned and patriotic Americans. The Tea Party movement poses a threat not only to the accumulated power of the governing class, but their livelihoods. Thus, a concerted effort to marginalize them by any vile or preposterous means possible. The nation cannot, therefore, make any meaningful course correction unless and until the people finally understand that they have been lied to and conned by the current establishment. You got to get rid of these leaders, because they're not the leaders. Or you know what? The next solution is you got to go elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I find this interesting because, you know, we have talked about alternate parties all throughout this. Once they screwed up at the convention, we start to look at alternate parties, because it became clear that the GOP is damn near unreformable. And it's only reformable now if you can get these people while they're down. But as you can see, the people doing the investigation into why they lost were responsible for the loss in the first place, and they sure as hell aren't going to come back and say, hey, I was wrong, you shouldn't hire me anymore. So this goes back to the article from J.T. Hatter earlier, Message to GOP, believe it or not. And he says that Ronald Reagan famously said, "I didn't leave the Democratic Party, the party left me." That's the way I feel right now. The Republican Party has left me, and I have nowhere else to go yet. I'm ready to move on. I can hear the storm of protest and denial coming my way already. What do you mean, quit the Republicans? A third party has no chance against the Democratic Party machine. You're throwing away your vote. Have you ever heard that type of argument before, Rex?
I have. I've heard that argument before. I was told that if I voted for anybody other than Mitt Romney, I was throwing away my vote.
Exactly. So this is the default argument, and it and the Republican status quo are no longer acceptable. As Thomas Parnell said, "I'll seek a readier path." If I believed that there was a chance in 10 of reforming the Republican Party, I'd work hard on the reformation, rebranding, and rebirth efforts. But we're talking about the party of Trent Lott, George Bush, John Boehner, Daryl Issa, and John McCain. It is the party of faux conservatism and little else. It's time for a change. The Constitution Party, Independence Party, Libertarian Party, the Tea Party, and others need to join forces and form the conservative splinter faction within the Republican Party. It needs to gain power and influence, attract followers based on a solid platform of conservative values, and oppose compromise efforts by the GOP. And when the time is right, it needs to take over the Republican Party or split from it once and for all. The GOP is no longer an option. It is only a slower train to socialist hell.
Wow, that's a serious indictment.
Yeah, he
I
was,
like it.
He sound like he'd been listening to this show.
he might
at
have
least
been.
In spirit.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, that's if it's not evident to people by now, then you know, I don't know if it ever really will be. Look, the simple fact is, if you know, you got to tell other people who are, quote, Republican or conservative what's going on, that this is just a game and that these people are going to hand Obama everything that he wants with, like you said, some pullback. Like, instead of taxing those who make $200,000 or more, it'll be $250,000 or more, or some other cosmetic fix like that. What you need to do is you need to call, email, tweet, Facebook these people every single day and let them know you do not raise taxes on anybody when the economy is as sluggish as it is and 22% of your fellow Americans don't even have a job. You do not suck capital out of the private sector when you have this kind of a mess. I mean, you shouldn't ever do it, but the fact is when you have a thriving economy, you can afford to tax more for socialist programs. But when your economy is anemic at best, you do not take private capital out of the market and give it to government stupidity. Even if you were to tax 100% of the income of every single American who makes more than $200,000, you would not put a dent in the deficit for this year alone. It's stupid.
Oh. It's absolutely ridiculous, and the size of the problem is so big that without a growing economy, the amount of money that's owed by the government that is, quote, mandatory, which is the interest on the federal debt, which the Federal Reserve is damn well going to collect, so you can't not give them that money because you need to borrow another trillion this year. You know, so they're going to say, hey, we're not going to pay this interest on the debt. They're like, oh, okay, yeah, well, we're not going to give you that loan then. Right, so that's totally getting paid, okay? So that's in the can. All right, then the rest of it is this entitlement spending. The amount of interest on the federal debt is close, approaching $500 billion. The amount of mandatory spending, which is essentially entitlements, is somewhere in the neighborhood of 2.4. So you add that together, you get 2.5 trillion is mandatory and has to be spent no matter what. So you haven't paid for any, you know, the Forestry Service, the military, the EPA, congressional salaries, the Department of Energy, Department of Education, you know, National NIST, all that kind of stuff, NIH. None of that's been paid for, okay? You're only taking in $2.3 trillion in revenue. So
yep.
You're underwater. The only
yep.
way you can get out of that is you have to grow the economy. And how are we going to go about growing the economy?
By taxing
by taxing to prosperity. That's exactly what you're going to do. Tax people who create wealth. If you tax something, you get less of it, so there will be less wealth. And so what you'll do she'll slowly start shrinking and strangling the economy because entitlements are adjusted for inflation every single freaking year. And so they go up every single year. And what that means is the demand to find money to fund this ever-increasing spending goes up every year.
Mm-hmm.
So the demand on your income constantly goes up. And so they need taxes and more taxes and more taxes. But you know what? They can't get the taxes, so they have to resort to a tax by another name. This is why Mitt Romney was so popular. He never raised taxes in Massachusetts. He just raised fees.
Fees.
Yeah. It's the same damn thing. It's a tax by another name.
Of course it is, because apparently, you know, the argument goes taxes. Well, but, you know, if you want government services, you have to pay for them. Where exactly in the Constitution does it say that the government is supposed to provide me with any service whatsoever? I mean, from what I understood, it was supposed to protect my liberty and defend me from foreign invasion and keep me unmolested in my business affairs. It doesn't – okay, granted, the Constitution does say that it is to provide roads. One can argue whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it is constitutional. It's in the Constitution, so I'll give them that one. But what other services are we supposed to be getting from these people? I mean, if you're 65 or older, guess what? They're your health insurance provider. You don't have a choice. And with this new Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, they're going to become everybody's health insurance provider. You have no choice. Now, if you somehow think that government is better at providing you these things than the free market is, you don't have to experiment with it here in this country. There are many other places that already have these systems. Go there. Why do you want to do it here? We're different. And then the other thing is that some of the spending that they they got a spending problem. They don't have a tax problem. They got a spending problem. They need to stop spending. I mean, does anybody even realize that these people are spending $3.5 trillion per year? $3.5 trillion. Now think about that. That's 3.5 thousand million. It is a staggering amount of money. Are you getting anything close to a good return on, quote, that investment? Not even close. I mean, they spent like, I don't know, $100 million to study the effects of alcoholism on prostitutes in China to try to encourage them to drink less while they were on the job. This is ridiculous.
You know, Rex, when I lived in Washington, D.C., Washington, D.C. has the highest income tax, state income tax. It's not really a state, but if it were, state income tax on incomes anywhere in the nation, right? 10%. So, you know, I lived in D.C. and I looked around the city, and it is what I call dump city. It is just freaking dump, except for, you know, like the National Mall and a few of the other things. But the rest of that city, you could hit the whole thing with flamethrowers and nobody would know. You know, just this is all a big mistake. What is this? You know, why is this, you know, here? But it looks freaking terrible, okay? But you have the highest, you know, state tax rate. Where is this money going? And when I would ask people this, they said, well, it's going, you know, support the roads and the buses. I'm like, but these are the crappiest roads I've ever driven on, too. You know? And then somebody looked at the city of Detroit, which has a smaller population, and more roads, right, Motor City. And guess what? All the roads in Detroit, like driving on glass, you know, they keep them paved, keep them nice because it's Motor City, right? That's what they do. And they have so many thousands of miles of roads, and D.C. has something like one-tenth that, more taxes, a greater tax base, all this kind of stuff, and it's just a complete disaster. And I'll tell you where it went. My fire station right around the corner from where I lived up on Capitol Hill was running a prostitution ring where the firemen were selling time with the female EMTs. And once that sting was conducted, it turned out several other, almost a pandemic, if you will, across the city of firemen selling time to the EMTs. That's good government.
Well, you know, when Marion Barry was the mayor, what would you expect? Plus, wasn't Barney Frank also running some kind of sodomite prostitution ring out of his apartment when he was there, too? It seems to be the way of doing business in D.C. Apparently, they like to screw each other and screw people over. I got to say, Tex, though, when you hold up Detroit as a paragon of success over and against D.C., that's pretty bad.
Yeah. Oh,
I mean, of all the cities in all the world, Detroit. But that's pretty bad because the analogy works. Well, look. The fact is that the spending won't stop until you make them stop it. And that means that you have to actually pressure them to stop it.
and you do not have the right to call them up and bitch about spending and then add the caveat of, except for my favorite little handout. That's how they get all of us. Everybody's got their favorite little handout, so you will go toe-to-toe to take away everybody else's handout, but not yours. You know, we've got to stop spending on the Department of Education and the foreign wars, but don't cut my Social Security check. We've got to stop spending on Social Security and the foreign wars, but I need my free education. You see, that's the problem. Everybody's got their little angle that they're getting it. You know what? The market will provide you a better price and a better product and better service than the government ever could, and so it's time to stand up. And some conservatives are actually standing up, take their lead, okay? This is from Brent Bozell, Media Research Center, in a letter to Little Prince Rince Cubis. Rince, it pains me to say this, but if the Republican Party breaks its word to the American people and goes along with President O'Blah-Blah with tax increases, it will have betrayed conservatives for the final time. I will make it my mission to ensure that every conservative donor to the Republican Party that I have worked with for the last three decades, and there are many, and they have given tens of millions to Republican causes, gives not one penny more to the Republican Party or any member of Congress that votes for tax increases, he warned. And that goes for you, too. Do not send any money to the GOP, the RNC, their Senate fund, or anything else. If you have a truly conservative candidate that you like, send that candidate the money directly. Do not feed this rhino beast. It has a rhino virus, and if you intend to excise the rhino virus and restore conservatism to the GOP, don't feed this beast. He also wrote letters to the crying tan John Boehner and Mitch Rhino McConnell. He said, with the so-called fiscal cliff rapidly approaching, both sides are making opening gambits, and the talk so far is alarming, Brent Bozell wrote in a letter dated November 27th to Republican leaders. Conservatives have one question to ask. If you now claim a tax increase on small business is the correct course of action, were you lying all along when you claimed this tax increase would decimate the economy, he wrote? Because if you were not lying, you will now be willing participants in the destruction of American jobs in a time of economic crisis. Wow. That's pretty powerful. That's Brent Bozell. I recommend you send him a tweet or a Facebook and let him know right on, Mr. Bozell. This guy's no joke. He's powerful. He's been there for a long time. He's a stand-up guy, and he's calling them on the carpet because these guys are lying. They are about to fleece you because they have no spine. They have no negotiating skills. They have no principles, and they have no core. Basically, Mitt Romney is merely the epitome of all of these insipid pricks. And now that Romney's gone, we can all cheer. But Boehner's still here. McConnell's still here. Cantor is still here, Rubio is still here, and that other prick who doesn't have an elected position but is extremely devastating, Karl Rove, is still here. We got to clean house.
And, you know, why would they go along with this? Well, they would go along with it because they're not really against it. I mean, it's not like Barack Obama has suddenly forced their hands, you know, and they have to. They don't have a choice. I mean, who designed the fiscal cliff anyway? Congress could... They have the votes to go break this thing up, as Gingrich said, into a bunch of smaller measures. But the problem is the Republican Party leadership doesn't want to do that. John Boehner doesn't want to do that. He wants the fiscal cliff so he can make it look like I didn't have a choice. That's why I had to go along with Barack Obama's plan. It's all window dressing. None of it's real. He doesn't have a problem with it. And you know what? If Mitt Romney came in, Boehner was going to be a heck of a lot happier because he'd be able to do the exact same thing, but say, you know, well, you know, this is what Mitt Romney wants. We're enacting irks and bulls, and we're trying to be responsible about the deficit and all this kind of crap. And it would be the same thing that George Bush was saying back in the freaking 1990s when he was running for office.
Yep. Well, it's the top of the hour, and the call-in number
and do you
is
have that? Would you happen to have that, by the way?
I'm sorry. What are we talking about?
The George Bush clip? I thought I sent it.
George Bush, yes. You're talking about H.W., Eat My Shorts?
Yes. Yes,
yes, I
so
do believe.
This is what a principled Republican who actually believes what he says when he's running for office. Let's hit it.
raise taxes, and I'll say no. And they'll push, and I'll say no. And they'll push again, and I'll say to them, read my lips.
And the crowd went wild.
This is your moment. We're ready to be left.
They lied to. You know,
they went,
the Republican
yep.
Party's been lying to you for something like, you know, for decades.
Since Reagan left.
Yeah, exactly. How long? I mean, the only time they didn't lie to you was under Reagan. I mean, people complain about the EPA now. Who created that thing? Freaking Richard Nixon. Wage and price controls, which is like communism. Richard Nixon. The guy was a Republican. So, you know, you got to look at your own party and just figure out, you know, I don't know, is it fixable? Is it not fixable? You know, I thought it would be, right? Reagan comes in, okay, but Reagan had to fight the party establishment, break its back, right, to get in there. And then we went and elected that guy because he said that. And then in 1990, John Sununu and Bush, they went and they raised taxes anyway. And Newt Gingrich said, to hell with you.
Yep.
And then
he hung the phone up on
the next great success of the Republican Party in his 1994 takeover, and the party said, "The hell with that. We're not about cutting taxes or slowing down spending."
Yep. And here's the interesting thing. It was Sununu that called Gingrich up and told him that Bush is raising taxes. Gingrich hung up on him because he was the whip, right? Gingrich hung up on Sununu. And it was Boehner who orchestrated the coup to get rid of Gingrich. And who were the two yahoos that stole the convention for Mitt Romney to lose to Barack Obama? John Sununu, John Boehner. Are you people ever going to learn? If you want to reform this party, and I do believe that it is possible to reform it, even if it isn't, you still have to try because it's going to take a massive effort of awareness to get alternate parties moving, which I think is on the rise, but I don't know if we'll see it in 2014 and 2016, although I think that they'll have a stronger showing. This is the current, quote, conservative brand. You have to try and reform it. Don't try to reform the rhinos. The rhinos are non-reformable. You can reform the party if you excise them. They have got to go. You've got to remove them. Top of the hour, call the number 646-649-1013, 646-649 or 1013. We have a caller from area code 925. You're live with Tex and Rex. What's on your mind about the fiscal cliff?
925, would that be me, Polar Crew, Paul?
Hey, Paul, good to hear from you.
Okay, yeah, I haven't heard from you. I haven't been with you guys in a while. That was quite nice it was quite nice listening to that rant. Laughing with you as I was on mute, so I didn't dialogue too much. Physical cliff. Newt had a piece out, I think it was on the 30th, and he outlined it. There is no physical cliff in front of us within the next 30 to 60 days. We're over it in a downfall, and it's all about slowing the descent and then doing something so we can come up. Scale our way back up to the precipice and then walk away from it, right? So we're already over the cliff. That is the red herring that Obozo put out there, and that McConnell and O'Boner have glommed onto, and they took the bait, and Obozo's just clamping down hard on them. And the news got it right again, and you guys have already touched on this. Little pieces of legislation that we can get through that are very crisp, to the point, and not omnibus bills. When was the last time that we had an omnibus bill that actually did something good? I can't think of one. Something good. Something good. Yeah, not an omnibus bill passed, but something that did something good, right?
Oh, that one after 9/11 that created the TSA, right? That was an awesome one.
The Patriot Act.
Good.
Yeah, now you can't even get on a plane without being molested.
Right. I mean, there's things that are
It's cheaper than going down to 14th Street.
Yeah. Okay. So, we're jokingly lamenting. Yeah, there has never been a good omnibus bill. These big-ass things are problems that we get through on emotion because of some catastrophic event or some made-up red herring that that politicians have scared us into. Right. The last time we saw small focused pieces of legislation that came through that solved real world problems that I can remember. I mean, you guys have much broader memories in this space than I do. Was when Newt was driving the House. I can't. And help me remember the last time these things happened.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's only one person that has been able to do that successfully, you know, how do we get rid of that many people in the GOP that will not hearken to what has been successful for us in the past? And this lamenting that we're talking about is, well, how do we purge ourselves from these rhinos and these full of their own ego at the top right now?
Well, I mean, what I would say is the first thing we have to do is, you know, Boehner's going to sell us out, right? That's kind of in the cards already. So when Boehner sells you out, or even before it, but, you know, maybe it's more effective after it happens, I don't know, but let the party know, this guy cannot be the Speaker of the House. He's a complete disaster. And just start inundating these people with letters and tweets and going to meetings. I mean, and let them know your dissatisfaction with this. Too many people sit at home and they watch television or listen to the, you know, conservative talk radio and then, you know, talk to their friends and that's it. But they don't follow up with getting in contact with their representatives and letting them know what's happening. You know, as Rand Paul was saying, if John Boehner had just like a million people send him an email or tweets or letters to his office, you know, to tell him, hey, cut this stuff off, he probably would, because he's a spineless dweeb. He's not going to stand up to that, you know. Bonus points if they come from Ohio, where he's from, right? So if people would just do stuff like that, but too many of them sit around fulminating, and then they're like, oh, my God, I don't know what to do. I'm going to go buy a gun and, you know, some ammo and some beanie weenies and some sleeping bags and pull up here and wait for the apocalypse or something, you know.
Mm-hmm. I hear that. It's really motivating people into action and not just reaction and lamenting. It's getting, you know, some like-minded people that you live with in your neighborhood to actually go do something. I hear you.
Yeah. And I think it's also a matter, and Paul, it's a matter of expectation. I mean, I think that one of the problems we have in our Twitter speed, Facebook, instant access culture is we're totally impatient. And, you know, we think that, like, you know, this next election, it's either, you know, the end of the country or we win. So, you know, it doesn't work that way.
Oh, so, I'm totally there.
But I think people have that expectation,
yeah.
You know, like Obama won, so the country's lost. Right? You know, that's the view. Like, Obama's just a tool. He's just the current moron running the White House. You know, and I even hear conservatives talk about, well, he's the guy who's running the country. No, he's not. The president never runs the country. We run the country. This is just the guy who runs the government, and he's the commander-in-chief. I'm not saying it's not a powerful position. It is the most powerful position. But he doesn't have control over the economy. And you know what? You're not going to get rid of these things in one election cycle. We're not going to reform the Republican Party in one election cycle. We're not going to have a rising alternate party in one election cycle. But what you have to do is incrementally chip away at it. And like you said, reach out to people locally who are like-minded, make them aware, get them to understand what's going on, and take action. Look, ultimately, the only reason that this succeeds is because we fall for the lie of the duopoly. We fall for their rhetoric and their bullshit when behind the scenes they are just out to fleece us. Start actually holding them to account.
Rex, I would tell you, look, I've talked to people about this, and I said, look, this GOP thing is a complete disaster. I mean, we have to get rid of this leadership, right? We got to get rid of this leadership and replace them with conservatives. And if we can't do that, we all have to leave en masse. Like, oh, but, you know, a third party can never win. Well, it's not a third party. First, it would be a second party because these two parties basically completely agree on everything, so we need to get out of this party and create something new. And they're like, yeah, but the amount of time it would take to create that, I mean, you'd lose like one or two election cycles before it could happen. Well, who cares if you win an election cycle and the nominee is Mitt Romney, for God's sake? It's the same freaking thing. Go ahead and lose that election cycle. Use that time to build up an actual conservative party so that when you win, it actually has meaning, because winning is pointless. It's about governing. You govern the same way, what are you doing? Go ahead.
Yeah, I hear you. No, I hear you. I'm sorry to cut you off. I thought you had paused a second there. So, you know, I look back at the 2010 cycle when we had Steele at the helm, right? Was it Michael Steele? I always get that mixed up. You know who I'm talking about, the RNC chair, Mr. Steele. He did some great things to position us to really get some good conservatives, right? He had some good rules in there. And he was, at least he had a conservative mindset of getting, not the rhino fed, but to get, you know, strong conservatives as the candidates. Well, he got ousted, you know, and how, and so I look at that and say, okay. So
kind of like Gingrich?
I was even tweeted out there, you know, just to see what people thought. Hey, what about Sarah Newt to be the RNC chair, right? How could something like that work? Like take over the RNC chairs, right? Independent of actually getting, the rhinos out of the seats in the House or Senate, so to speak, right? But the top down control of the RNC, could that be had?
Yeah. Well, look, I want to bring this to the conversation because this is an article I had. I didn't know how I was going to use it, but this is a perfect opportunity. Which is the ousting of conservatives, because, you know, we already have seen that Reagan came in, but only because he fought tooth and nail, and the only reason they stuck with him is it was good for the party, and the party did well under it, so like, okay, he's a conservative, but, you know, maybe we can control him somehow, and he did sign that 96 tax compromise, so, you know, taxes went up, so that's good for us, and so, you know, hey, we turn him into a rhino, right? So everybody loves Reagan, okay? Then Gingrich comes along, and he won't, you know, raise taxes, won't do any of that. And the party's like, let's get rid of this guy because he's causing problems. And then we have the Tea Party come in. They have to be gotten rid of because they're causing problems. Or sent over to K Street to get their chief of staff from Republican Party approved people who will make sure that whatever they do, it certainly won't be Tea Party stuff. It will be more establishment stuff. And then there's the little case of Michael Steele. So this is an article from Bruce Bartlett from the American
Conservative. Before you get into the article, I just want to let you know that we have Trog from Coalition of Freedom on the line. So, Trog, would you chime in along with Paul after Tex gets through his setup of the article? Okay.
Sure, and welcome, Trog. Let me get through this real quick. And I think what this is going to do is illustrate the amount of power that the party establishment can bring to bear on people that it doesn't like. Okay, so this is Bruce Bartlett, The Revenge of the Reality-Based Community and the American Conservative from November 26th. So he goes through and he talks about his journey as a Republican and when he became disillusioned. Coincides with when I became disillusioned. I was shocked beyond belief when it turned out that Bush really wanted a massive budget-busting new entitlement program after all, apparently to buy himself re-election in 2004. He put all the pressure the White House could muster on House Republicans to vote for Medicare D. It is worth remembering that Paul Ryan, among other so-called fiscal hawks, voted for this irresponsible, unfunded expansion of government. Suddenly I felt adrift politically and intellectually. Okay, so then he says, I began writing columns that were highly critical of Bush's policies and those of the Republican Congress, all based on solid conservative principles. In other words, I was criticizing them from the inside, from the right. A couple weeks before the 2004 election, Susskind wrote in a long article for the New York Times that quoted some of my comments to him that were highly critical of Bush and the drift of Republican policy. The article is best remembered for his quote from an anonymous White House official dismissing critics like me for being, quote, the reality-based community, quote. The day after the article appeared, my boss called to chew me out, saying that Karl Rove had called him personally to complain about it. I promised to be more circumspect in the future. Down the road, my book, Imposter, How George W. Bush Bankrupted America and Betrayed the Reagan Legacy, was published in February of 2006. I have been summarily fired by the think tank I worked for back in 2005. Now, among the interesting reactions to my book is that I was banned from Fox News. My publicist was told that orders had come down from on high, that it was to receive no publicity whatsoever, not even a tax. Whoever gave that order was smart. A tax from the right would have sold books. Being ignored was poison for sales. I later learned that the order to ignore me extended throughout Rupert Murdoch's empire. For example, I stopped being quoted in the Wall Street Journal. A while back, a reporter who left the Journal confirmed to me that the paper had given her orders not to mention me. Other dissident conservatives, such as David Frum and Andrew Sullivan, have told me that they are banned from Fox News as well. So this is what happens when you wander away from what the leadership wants. And you know what? This is the problem, because the leadership is all rhinos. And this is what's happening to the conservative movement. We're sending champions up, and they're finding anything they can to destroy them, their good name, ridicule them, demean them, exclude them from the process. And we, the conservative masses, who just sit around and watch TV and don't participate in the process, just go along with it, and we allow this to happen because we're not involved. That's the number one problem.
Look what they did to Ron Paul.
What was that? Sorry?
I said, look what they did to Ron Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, Ron Paul, I mean, this, look, you're absolutely right in bringing that up, Chris, because it is kind of the epitome of the issue. First thing to keep in mind, and this is something that we all have a tendency to forget because it is so pervasive. There are about 6 corporations with interlocking directorates that own about 96% of our media, including cable, network, and newspaper. And what Tex just described is how they silence voices. Now, what they did with Ron Paul is paint him as some kind of lunatic fringe, and his delegates and the Liberty Movement as some kind of infiltration into the Republican Party. If the Liberty Movement is an infiltration into the Republican Party, it is an infiltration of conservatives. And that's what you really have to wrap your brain about. You know, for 36 years, well, I think over the last 36 years, 23 years, Ron Paul was a Republican congressman from Texas, and he was a conservative. And I get all the time that, well, you know, but we don't – the Republican Party isn't really all libertarian. Ron Paul's a libertarian. You know, Ron Paul is only a libertarian as far as what Texas said before. It's his adherence to the Constitution and his love of federalism. That's about the extent of Ron Paul as a libertarian. If you take Ron Paul, even though he did run in the LP, because sometimes if you're a conservative and the Rhino Party is just taken over the GOP, that would might have been the most viable place for you to go. If you look at the general Libertarian Party platform and ideology, it is not that close to Ron Paul other than its adherence to the Constitution and federalism. Ron Paul is a conservative, and if you take what Ron Paul said and match it up to any Republican prior to 1968, he would be right in line with true conservative Republicans. And I think that's the thing that you have to remember. So why did they paint him as a kook? Why did they try to shut out his movement? It's the same reason they appropriated the Tea Party, and
Rex,
it is because we are dangerous. Go ahead.
Yes, I just want to answer a question from chat, which is who wrote that. It was Bruce Bartlett. In the American Conservative, and the article is called Revenge of the Reality-Based Community from November 26, 2010. So it's Bruce Bartlett in the American Conservative.
All right, and just as a point of housekeeping, we will be posting the articles from which we have read this evening and some clips on our Facebook page. So please make sure to go to the page, tell your friends to go to the page, and please like our page so that we will show up in your news feed. It is on Facebook, The Tex and Rex Show. The word and is spelled out, Tex and Rex Show. And go to the link for today's show, and probably about an hour after the show, we'll have these articles posted there for you to review. All right, I'm going to throw it to Chris and then Paul, unless, Tex, you've got something to add.
No, please go ahead. Let him speak.
All right, Chris.
Well, I was listening, and I've been doing a lot of research, and even though people say that, 2016 is a long ways away, there's actually been quite a bit of conversation about who's going to run in 2016. And I find that kind of refreshing because, you know, you saw my postings today about Santorum because he's, you know, hinting at running, and I pray to God that he doesn't
please
run.
Please don't.
Oh, God. People just don't understand who
stay
he
at
is.
Home, Rick.
But I've also had an opportunity to do a little bit more observation on Rand Paul because I really have not. You know, we've been busy with everything else that we've done through the primary and the election, and I didn't really know the guy. And so I've actually been reading some of his articles, listening to some of his clips, and going, you know, he's pretty feisty. He's pretty articulate. He has those same core values that his father does. I think he plays politics a little more. A little bit more than his dad does. But I don't know how they're going to stop him because he gets a lot where where Ron has been kind of blacked out. You know, obviously he's getting more airtime now that he's no longer running. just like Newton and everybody else. But it's kind of interesting. Rand kind of has his face in the news a lot out there. So it's going to be interesting to see what the, you know, how the Liberty Movement responds to him. You know, I've been bouncing around the different sites. But I think it's going to be very interesting. But what you guys said earlier was so key. You have to get rid of these rhinos. The problem is the elector, the people who vote think these rhinos are conservative Republicans. That's the problem. And I've said this before, conservatism has been co-opted just like liberal. You know what I mean? Come on, a classical liberal is our founding fathers, not Barack Obama. And so I think part of the problem or the challenge is that people look at libertarians like they're a bunch of freaks. You know, they want to run around naked through the woods, you know, and have no rules. They think that's what a libertarian is. And you nailed it. You know, Ron Paul is very conservative. He just wants the government not to control people's lives. So I think we're at a very interesting point in time, and I really believe that education is going to be key to this. You know, I just wanted to throw that out there while we were on that subject. I'm good.
No, it's a very good point, and I would argue that Rand Paul has two things going for him. One, he has his father's experience, including the mistakes that he made, and not mistakes in principle or ideology, principles in effectiveness and dealing with the party from which he's learned. And he also is basically standing on the movement his father built, so he doesn't actually have to build a movement. He just has to continue to lead it. And then, of course, being a senator rather than a congressman, which following the 17th Amendment is nothing more than a congressman with an extended term, but he's one out of 100 as opposed to one out of 435, so he has a little bit more prominence and his vote counts a little bit more. So I think he's certainly one to keep an eye on. And judging from his victory with the amendment to the NDAA regarding affirmation of the Sixth Amendment is pretty powerful. I know that some people are arguing that, you know, that it doesn't really help and indefinite detention is still there, and I think that that's fairly valid. However, it is definitely a step in the right direction, and if nothing, at least it is a moral victory that things can be done to curtail the police state. But I think that the activity is what is really important, and that is that people have to learn how to discern what a true conservative is versus exactly what you said, conservatism being co-opted, where the label is meaningless because it's now just a stand-in for Republican, irrespective of principle, which is exactly, as you said, what the liberals did with the word liberal, but then they tainted it, so now they've gone back to the word progressive. And again, who doesn't want liberal because the root word is liberty, and who doesn't want progressive because the root word is progress? Well, these are good things, but they've co-opted them to stand in for their socialist agenda, and the fact is that if you really think about it, a run-of-the-mill standard conservative today and a run-of-the-mill standard liberal today have minor rhetorical differences, but they're both corporatists, and that's what people have to really learn to understand, that the Constitution provides us with the power and the diffusion of power so that it is at your state and local level where you have a larger voice. Now, we spend a lot of time working and looking at national politics because the government has gotten so damn big. It's in every aspect of your life. It tells you what kind of light bulb you can put in your house, how much water you can use when you flush your toilet. They take money out of your pocket. And like I said before, they don't consider it taking money out of your pocket. They consider 100% of your wealth, your property, and your money as theirs. And in their benevolence, they decide how much to let you keep. And usually the way they go about it, and this is where you have to watch what these guys say, because, you know, Boehner, with his, you know, being led by Obama, is basically looking to not increase taxes on everybody, but he'll allow him to increase taxes on, quote, the millionaires and billionaires. But he will remove, quote, the loopholes or put limits on the deductions. Now, that's actually a tax increase. Don't let them fool you, because if they take away your deductions, even if they don't raise your rate, your taxes will go up. And this is what they always do. That's right. This is what they always
do. And you know what they do later? 4 years later, they get a different administration. You know what they do? They raise the rate. So, yeah, screw you twice on that. That was Romney's plan, by the way.
Yep. Not only do they raise the rate tax, but because of inflation, you're going to be pushed up into that next tax bracket, and you will be making, quote, more
yep.
money, only in nominal terms. In real terms, you will actually be making less money because the dollar will be worth that much less and it will be pushed into a higher bracket.
When did they
put
the alternative minimum tax in anyway, like in the 60s?
No,
like $250,000. Who the heck would ever make this? I mean, my
yeah.
guy, you know, now, like, you can have a couple, like, two people living together, you know, have a kid, all this kind of stuff. They can make $250,000 together. And, you know, bam. You know, all this stuff starts coming down because inflation, what was the dollar worth back in the 60s compared to what it's worth now? You know, we left the gold standard in the 70s since they, you know, put this thing in effect, and they've just been inflating ever since. You know,
mm-hmm.
and look, this QE3, it's $40 billion a year, okay? Or, sorry, it's $40
month.
Billion dollars
a month.
Month that they're pumping into. Yeah, a month that they're pumping into the economy. So if you run that out for 12 months, that's $480 billion, okay? So given, though, that you have a reserve requirement, because what's actually going on? They're saying it's mortgage-backed securities. So a bank says, I gave a mortgage. Here's the value of that mortgage. Give me that value in cash. So they buy out the mortgages, right? That's basically what it is. So the bank now has this much cash. Well, when the bank receives this cash, it has a reserve requirement, and the reserve requirement currently is 10%. So for every dollar it receives, it can loan out 90 cents, okay? So if you do the math on the $480 billion, loaned out 90% throughout the economy is $4.8 trillion. Okay, the current M2 money supply is $10.2 trillion. So if you ran this whole thing for a year, and it hasn't run for a year yet, but if it did run for a year, you're talking about an M2 increase of something like, you know, $4.8 trillion. So that's about a 53% expansion of the money supply. What does that do to prices? It goes up, right? So when prices go up, nobody can afford anything, so people have to start paying you more eventually because you're not going to work for a wage that, you know, so all this stuff gets worked out. Eventually, and what's happened is the price of everything has gone up 53%, and so, you know, at the end of the day, somehow your income will have increased in nominal dollars, but not in real dollars. But guess what? Now you have things like the alternative minimum tax bearing down on you, and all the tax rates are not getting adjusted, and you're just drowning in it.
Yep.
They've got it. They got to know. They have to know they're doing this, and there's got to be an alternative goal out there, because none of their solutions are even going to begin to touch this.
Yeah, well, look,
yeah, well,
is there an alternative
goal? The problem
goal?
Is
yeah.
they don't care, because the inflation thing, look, here's the problem with the inflation, is the government, they've kind of figured this out, well, I don't know that the government has, but the money people certainly have, which is counterfeiting is actually a fairly good business model, in a sense, if you don't actually care about the effect. Because if you start counterfeiting, right, which is essentially what expanding the money supply is, just printing up a bunch of dollars and saying that it's worth as much as the other dollars, but your very act of printing up these additional dollars is making all dollars worth less. When you first start spending that money, the economy hasn't adjusted. It doesn't know that you've just essentially counterfeited, right? And so you can buy things at standard prices with the counterfeit money or the new money that's been created. And so that's sort of that's the system. So it works at first, and then later on, as prices adjust by going up, essentially the price of everything adjusts by going up, except your income, then they have to counterfeit even more to make it work more effective the next time. And this is what Hayek was talking about with the booms and the busts.
Yep.
The booms are sort of like printing up a bunch of cash. It's like, you know, handing out bottles of whiskey to everybody and getting everyone really drunk. And then the bust is everyone wakes up with a freaking hangover, right? And so the solution then is to drink even more whiskey, print more money. And now we're printing
yep.
up trillions. You know, it all started, you know, in the tens of millions back in, you know, the 1913, 1915, all that kind of stuff, you know. Now we're in the trillions. That's how much we're printing up.
We're printing up so much, Tex, that they're realizing that they're going to have to get rid of the penny, the nickel, the dime, and the dollar, and possibly the $5 bill, because it is costing more to manufacture that currency than the currency itself is worth.
Well, not just that.
That's how
moving,
that is.
Moving it around, moving coin around, fuel,
mm-hmm.
you know, labor,
mm-hmm.
because it's worth
yeah,
it.
And the fact is that, look, the reason they keep spending and the reason they keep inflating, which is basically doing nothing more than, quote, restructuring the debt and then extracting more interest, which is what income taxes are, interest on the fake manufactured debt out of nothing, okay, is because every dollar that's brought into the economy is brought in as a debt to the Federal Reserve. I mean, take out any denomination of bill from your wallet right now and look at it. At the very top, it does not say U.S. Treasury bill. It doesn't say U.S. Treasury dollar. It says Federal Reserve note, Federal Reserve being a private banking cabal and note being a promissory note or a debt that you owe. So they have to keep borrowing in order to keep printing more money because that is the only way they can paper over their mistakes. And for right now, they're exporting most of that inflation, although you have seen a near 9% annual increase in the price of food over the last 4 years. But we've exported most of that debt, which is why Europe is falling apart. But at some point, that is going to come rushing back here. And what they do, as Tex very lucidly pointed out, they spend that money first. So it is government and those connected to government, the pharmaceutical industrial complex, the military industrial complex, anybody that's closely connected, especially Goldman Sachs, they spend that money first when it's still worth what it is that day before it filters through the economy and debases it. So all of these things, all of this increase, all of this quantitative easing does nothing more than redistribute wealth. And this is what Obama's after. Everybody thinks Obama's redistribution of wealth is to take from the wealthy and the middle class and give it to everybody else. No. As always, corporatists redistribute wealth by taking it from the poorest and the middle class, the merchant class, the bourgeoisie, those of us they hate more than anybody else, and transferring it up the chain to the uber wealthy. And this whole 99% versus 1% argument, that is false because that 1%, okay, includes most of those people who make more than 250 who are the job creators, which is why they lump it in as 1% and why they give you this meme of billionaires and millionaires, which are separated by an order of magnitude of 1,000 times, okay? Because it's really the 0.00001% who's causing all these problems, and they want you to be pissed off with the politicians because they could care less which one you have and which one you don't have. They'll get rid – you know, for them it was Romney or Obama. Doesn't really matter much. They'd go with either one. They'd be happy. And they want you to direct it against, quote, the wealthy as opposed to the uber-wealthy. And what they're doing with your money, they're preparing – for the chaos that they are creating. They are building fortresses for themselves. They are stocking up on supplies. And they'll just watch us go at each other for the meager leftovers. Unless you stop it. Unless you stop it. And the only way you stop it is to realize that you do have the power and you do have the tools. You've got the grand jury. You've got the sheriffs. You've got your state governments. And a lot of the governors and a lot of the legislators are now standing up and starting to nullify, especially with these stupid exchanges that Obama has in place. So the only way you get this to happen is you need to create a momentum, and that comes through education, which is what Paul talked about earlier and what Chris was talking about. It's up to you. Okay, now that means, great, listen to the Tex and Rex Show. We tried to deliver relevant information, maybe have a little fun while we're doing it. But you got to do something with this information. It isn't just about knowing what's going on. It's about telling others who may not know what's going on. And remember that at first they're going to resist because it is too shocking. And as long as they're imbibing on Fox News and MSLSD and the Wall Street Journal, they're not going to necessarily get what you're telling them. So you've got to show them documentary evidence, and you know where it is. Go to Coalition of Freedom on Facebook. There's plenty of information there. Share it with them. Educate them one at a time, and if you start it now, by 2014, we could see some real movement, and by 2016, we could do some real damage.
Well, you know, and Rex, the other thing is you have to find people who are demoralized, bewildered, you know, despondent over this defeat, right? Because those are the people that you need to convince that the leadership did this to you. This is a completely planned outcome of this election. From day one, they never wanted to hear from you and who you actually wanted to be the president. You never wanted Mitt Romney, and you know it. And they made sure that you were provided a choice only to vote for Mitt Romney. And so if you want to fix this, you have to realize, and you're talking to your friend now, you have to realize the leadership is the problem because the leadership claims that they believe these things, but they don't, and they go destroy the actual conservatives and then bring the information because it's all there. It's just the media has no interest in reporting to you information in a narrative fashion that tells you actually what's going on. You're just completely reacting to, oh, look, a bird. you know, something strange just happened. You know, everybody not pay attention to what the main story is, and they go off on that one other story. And then you start thinking about that, and you've lost the whole thread of what's going on. But if you can let them know that the leadership of the Republican Party is the problem, it doesn't mean necessarily that you're ever going to be able to reform the leadership, but now you've created someone else who has taken the red pill or at least been presented with it, right, where they can start saying, hey, yeah, this leadership sucks, and they are selling me out left and right. And I've believed in this party. You know, I've been a hardcore supporter. I'll go up and vote for their rhinos every single time because I want to save this country. Meanwhile, these are the people who are selling out because this is your, quote, opposition. It's not in opposition at all. It's in agreement. John Boehner has already sold out. He already said, what was it that he said there, Rex? He said, anyway, well, I guess Rex is finding the clip. But he already said that, you know, they're ready to be led. Okay, so this is your leadership. You remember when we had Speaker Gingrich, Speaker for Life? He wasn't ready to be led. He's like, hey, Clinton, you know, by the way, I got some plans. Move over. This is what we're going to be doing from now on. And Clinton had to go along with it. Why? Because the Speaker of the House is probably one of the most powerful positions in all of Washington. But the rest of
them... They are if they have a plan.
Exactly. If they know what they're doing, it is.
Yeah. He went in there with a very specific plan. Good.
Yeah, I think I have that clip of Newt. But first, I think, hold on, I've got Boehner here. Let's see. Here's Boehner on how he's going to lead. Okay, Johnny, it's okay. It's okay. You can negotiate with the president. No, you don't have to raise taxes. Johnny, calm down. You know what? Why don't you still get yourself another tan, and we'll listen to Speaker Newt Gingrich, who had a different approach.
I got to make a comment on Boehner's way to negotiate first. Stick up a bottle in his mouth, man. That's all he wants.
Yeah. Give him another pacifier.
Just more tit. Yeah, that's all he wants. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Did you know when he was a baby, by the way, Rex, his nightlight was actually a tanning bed.
And of course, I think he's very upset because Obama's taxed it at a rate of 10%. But here's Newt on how you deal with a guy like Obama. Or not. For whatever reason, we don't have it.
Hold on. What is best in life? To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to hear the lamentation of the women.
That is good. That is good.
Those are the choices before you, America. You can either have Conan Newtzilla or crying tan baby Boehner. It's your choice. I mean, what kind of party do you want to have? And then whoever's the opposition, it wouldn't matter. Because, I mean, let's face it, Bill Clinton was a far more formidable foe than Barack Obama can ever hope to be. Bill Clinton is a very intelligent man. He had a certain degree of charisma, and he was a strong negotiator and a pretty formidable lawyer. Barack Obama is a community organizer, a mediocre golfer, a passable basketball player, and what was he, guest janitor at Harvard? Text?
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, if Newt can handle Clinton, why can't Boehner handle, you know, Obama? It's pathetic.
He doesn't
want your thoughts?
That's the point. Boehner, he's on the other side. It's like he infiltrated the party and was like, hey, if I just sit here and shut up and agree with everything that they do, eventually I'll rise in the ranks of the party, right? You know, just quietly kind of behind the scenes, I'll be this methodical, calculating guy. And, you know, but at the end of the day, I'm all about this big government spending because, you know, that's a pretty good gig. And all these conservatives, they come in and they want to change things. And I mean, look, this is what people really have to realize. It took 100 years for liberals to do this to this country, right, to get us to where we are today. And it's going to be hard to get back because, my God, they destroyed the education system in the nation now. It's basically propaganda brainwashing schools that everyone's going to. And to get it back, it is going to require a similar effort. And you can't delude yourself a bit about, you know, change overnight and all that kind of stuff. Not that that doesn't happen in history, but, you know, to in order to change this, it is going to require a change on the behalf of the American people in their way of thinking and to start thinking about liberty. And that's why the Ron Paul movement is so powerful, because it's leading to this change in thought. You know, it's like the new Great Revival. You know, you read about American history, you talk about the Great Revival and all this kind of stuff. Well, this is sort of the great constitutional revival that's going on, and Ron Paul really has been heading this thing up. And you got to get people listening to it. And, you know, for people who just hate Ron Paul, and there are some Republicans who just are like, oh, those Ron Paul guys, they're really Occupy Wall Street, or they're, you know, a bunch of liberals, or whatever it is that they think, don't mention his name. Just talk about the principles. You know, look, do you believe this, that, or the other? Let's start fighting for that in the party, and let's go find the rhinos who don't believe that and vote them out.
Yep, very true. And just to keep in mind something, Obama won, okay, with 13% less voters voting for him than 2008, which is atrocious. And in any normal year, that would have been an absolute total loss. Of course, you know, we found Romney, who happened to be the only guy that could lose to him such spectacular numbers. But, you know, they keep throwing this bullshit out that, well, 53% of Americans voted for the position of Obama, so he's in a position of strength, he has a mandate. Only 20% of the people in this country voted for you, asshat. You have no mandate. You have nothing. You simply went up against an opponent who was such a loser that you won by default. Obama has no mandate. He has no standing.
Yeah, exactly.
He has no competency. He is very easy to defeat. Any competent Speaker of the House with true conservative principles and a modicum of negotiating skills would be able to destroy Obama the way Newt Gingrich handled Bill Clinton. That's what we have
absolutely
to keep in mind.
Well,
how powerful is the House?
And Rex, I want to respond. There was a comment in chat about Boehner just wanting to play golf, and I think we have a clip on that.
Gingrich wants to play golf?
Oh, no, not Gingrich. Boehner. Boehner.
Oh,
Boehner.
Boehner.
Actually,
Boehner.
Yeah, actually, I think that Boehner does actually prefer golf even more than Obama does as far as skipping his job. Here's Boehner.
It won't happen around a campfire at Camp David or in a secret room at some Air Force base, or as much as I'd like, over 18 holes of golf.
What
you
I
know,
found
that
fascinating about that.
I got to say something. My standing Twitter for you, and this is a bomber, a bozo, and Boehner. Yeah, and sorry, folks on the air. Who is it that just is kissing their balls and chaff before they go out on the before they tee off on this stuff? I'm just sick of this golf crap. When has one of those guys stayed home and actually tried to do their job? Anyway,
I don't understand the fetish for golf. You know, why has everyone got a golf all the time? You know, is anybody doing anything? You know, I mean, besides selling out there. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the fact is that they don't have to do anything. That's the whole point with this, quote, fiscal cliff. If in order to push us over it, which, as Paul already said, we went over it. America, we went over the fiscal cliff in 1933, and then we got kicked further down the cliff and crashed on the rocks in 1971. Okay, so, you know.
Well, we did have a resurgence when we took all the gold out of Europe, okay, in World War II. But then we just frivolously blew that away, and just let it go to crap. So we did have a resurgence during that war, but that was it.
Well, the
thing about World War II, when we got all that gold, was we had already created the Federal Reserve system before that. So the Federal Reserve was like, hey, thanks for the gold, but you were screwed back in 1913, so it's not going to help you much.
Well, and remember, following the war, they set up the Bretton Woods system, which was a quasi-floating gold exchange rate, not really a gold standard, but it's kind of a quasi-floating gold rate. And the Bretton Woods system was brought to an end by Nixon in 71
Roosevelt
and 73.
Roosevelt was cutting the price of gold from his bed. I mean, literally, he just, like, this is the price of gold today. And, you know, whatever it was, who came
$20.67.
I forget who was talking about Morgan Powell. Someone like that came in the office, and they said, okay, look, here's the deal. The Treasury Department thinks the price of gold should be today $42.16 an ounce. And Roosevelt would say, no, let's make it $42.23 an ounce. And they were like, well, why? And he said, because that's a lucky number. 23 is a lucky number. I mean, seriously, that's how the price of gold was being set by then, by presidential fiat. Where the hell is that in the Constitution?
That's how moronic these people are. It's frightening. And the thing is that as far as this, quote, fiscal cliff, this fiscal cliff Clavin that they're bringing up to put us into fear of chaos, they don't have to do anything. They can just all go play golf and it'll happen. Now, here's the thing, and this is what they won't tell you. Let's just assume that this isn't a show and that they're actually having these negotiations and that they cannot get anywhere with the negotiations and we get hammered with these tax increases, okay? First of all, these income tax increases aren't as devastating as the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act tax increases, which nobody seems to talk about because John Boehner funded the damn thing. But the taxes will be bad because they will wick wealth out of the economy. However, the automatic spending cuts would actually possibly allow money to stay in the economy because we wouldn't be borrowing as much. So it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing if we went, quote, over this fiscal cliff. The problem is that the fiscal cliff that we're on is the fact that they're planning on spending $1 trillion a year that they cannot get in revenue no matter what they set the tax rate to over each and every year over the next 10 years. That's the irrecoverable.
Here's the thing. The fiscal cliff, what's being advertised to you as the fiscal cliff, which is these, you know, Bush tax increases combined with these spending cuts, that's not the actual cliff. The actual cliff is the damn deal they're going to cut where they raise taxes and they don't cut the spending. The deal is the fiscal cliff, and that's what you're going to get. Cutting, reducing spending across the board and, you know, raising taxes, okay, well, that would actually help start bringing the budget into balance, but only because the spending cuts are freaking mandatory, right? Because that's the problem. Now, the raising taxes is just stupid and harmful to the economy because you got to grow your way out of this thing. But the real fiscal cliff is going to come because they're not going to address spending. And I already know this because what is the terms of the debate? Whether or not you're going to raise taxes on people who make over $250,000, which apparently is now $1 million, might as well be. They're printing so much money, and, you know, pretty soon $1 million would buy a freaking loaf of bread, you know, who cares? But, you know, that's the terms of the debate. That's what you're watching on television because that's what's driving the debate. No one is talking about the cuts. Is John Boehner making a forceful case as to why these things need to be cut? What is his plan for reforming this? How do you reform Medicare? How do you reform Medicaid? How do you reform Social Security? John Boehner talking about any of this? No, he didn't have any ideas. Remember what they complained about Newt Gingrich for? Oh, this guy's got an idea a minute, this guy. Oh, he's coming up with plans. We don't need guys with plans. We need guys who don't know what they're doing, like John Boehner, just going to raise taxes. I don't have a plan. This can't balance the budget. You need more money. Let's get more money. That's John Boehner's plan. Let's just get more money. And then I could go play 18 holes of golf with Barack Obama. And maybe I could get a job like Mitt Romney was trying to do the other day. That's where you are.
Sounds like fun. Wish we could do this more often. But, you know, the fact is that this theatrical nonsense that's going on only works. It only works because the terms are undefined. The problem is confusing and vague, and their rhetoric is nothing more than a dance as opposed to an effective solution. And you won't understand that if you're being fed the information by the media and you're going with the use of the words that they use, such as investment. Well, that means spending money on crap that nobody really needs. Or, revenue increases. That means stealing more of your money in order to cover the spending, quote, investment on things you don't really need. Or quantitative easing, which is nothing more than the fabrication of new money units based on nothing at the expense of devaluing all other money units. So you've really got to understand the true terms, and you have to have a basic understanding of economics. Don't think it's just the dismal science. You don't need a PhD in it. It's actually fairly basic. But get yourself educated about basic economics. Understand the terms that they use to obfuscate their real intentions, and then call them out. And you don't only call them out. I mean, look, if you're a shut-in, you're stuck at home, please tweet, email, call, do all that stuff. If you're going to a Tea Party meeting, go there, educate them. Okay, some of the Tea Parties have been only appropriated because they lost their way. It's not that they're leaders there who are keeping them penned down. They just lost their way. Educate them. Show them what it's about. Let them know that the Liberty Movement is a friend of the Tea Party, not an enemy. Get together. Numbers work. And don't think that the Libertarian Party is an enemy either, because we're on the same page on these money issues. So you can work with them on that. And even some of the Occupy people have identified the same problem. And put pressure on these people. If you're a Republican, then you better get your ass to your meetings. They're already having
any
their,
harbor
their,
in a storm. It's about
that's
changing
right.
minds. Change the yeah. national conversation. Screw what the media says. Look, nobody believes the media anyway, okay? That's just whether they're left, right, whatever. The left is on about, you know, faux news and, you know, Fox News is all propaganda nonsense, okay? You know, well, it is, because I just watched it over the last year, and I saw Karl Rove, who owns the largest super PAC, promoting Mitt Romney, and I already associated, you know, read out to you basically all the associations that guy has directly into the Republican Party, you know, all the way up to the chair of the RNC, you know, to promote Mitt Romney. So, yeah, it's all propaganda. Karl Rove was propagandizing for Mitt Romney for an entire year, pretending that he actually cared about these other candidates, when behind the scenes he's spending hundreds of millions of dollars to assassinate these candidates, all the conservatives, right? Their candidacies, anyway, not literally, but, you know, their candidacies and all this kind of stuff. You know, so, but it's the same thing on the other side, right? And you know what? If you want to ring that bell for the Democrats, right, to get them thinking about things, they all loved Howard Dean. And the party went in and they destroyed Howard Dean because he was an insurgent within the Democrat Party. Howard Dean was dangerous to the Democrat Party. So they shut him down. You know why? Because he said, we're going to go fight in Minnesota. We're going to go fight in Kentucky or wherever. We're going to go fight in Iowa. Rah! Well, he's just boosting up the crowd, right? But, oh, his voice cracked or something when he, you know, gave that hurrah. And therefore, he could never be president now. And they played it over and over and over again in order to ridicule him and demean him. And they destroyed his candidacy, and all these Democrats were stuck plowing in to go vote for John Kerry, another Massachusetts piece of shit governor, against George Bush. And they hated it. Every one of them hated it. And they did it anyway. Well, you just had the same damn thing done to you, right? So go make common cause. Hey, this political class is out of control. This country's falling apart. You know why? Because everything's getting federalized, and everyone's deciding in Washington how to enforce the rules on everyone. That's the
yep.
problem. The solution
yep.
is federalism, which is devolve the power back to the states, not to make a federal, capital F, federal issue, a national government issue of every stinking local problem.
You nailed it. And that's where Ron Paul is a libertarian, as vis-a-vis his federalism. All right, we're in the last seven yes. minutes of the show, so I want to throw it to Paul and Chris. You've each got 2 minutes for your closing remarks, and then Tex and I will bring it home. Go ahead, start with Paul.
I don't have anything to add right now. You guys are just tearing it up tonight. Love it.
All right, thanks, Paul. Thanks for calling in. Appreciate you being here. Chris?
Well, when I step back and try to put an eyeball on this, on the whole problem, everything from, you know, we talk about the fiscal cliff, or we talk about the tax, the Bush tax cuts going away. We know there's going to be a debt ceiling increase again in January. We know with, you know, the bailout, the, you know, the QE1, 2, and infinity, that it's going to devalue our money probably, you know, we've heard this number before, somewhere around 50%. There's a lot going on. You know, we got wars and rumors of wars, and then there's that other factor that kind of gets slipped often is those trillions and trillions of U.S. dollars out there that are sitting in other countries' coffers that are starting to negotiate deals with China directly using China currency, and that's another component to this. I mean, I don't know how to factor that in, Rex. I mean, sometimes you look at this stuff and you go, are you kidding me? What are these idiots doing in Washington, D.C.? Unless I can't fathom that based on what I've seen in the last, you know, 10, 15, 20 years of any of these people, that they really get it all, or they get it all and they know exactly what they're doing, and they want to go off that cliff so they can, you know, restructure a whole new economic system. That's that's the only other thing I can think about, you know, that is happening. They can't all be that stupid. Maybe they are. Maybe they're just so damn corrupt they can't see where they're going, or they really think that this is the direction it's got to go, so they can, you know, print a new currency and make a whole new mess and start over at zero. What do you think?
Well, Chris, I think it's both. It could be the Bancor, it could be the Mero, it could be SDR, who knows. But I think it's both. I think some of them do know what's going on, and they like it because they want to eliminate the sovereignty of these United States, because we are what stands in the way of a neo-feudal techno-global corporatism. Others are just incompetent opportunist politicians who don't understand this stuff and just kind of go with what the party leadership tells them to do. You're voting this way because this is what we've decided. And they're like, okay, well, that sounds good. And then go back on the phone and raise more money for your next reelection, you moron. So that's kind of how they do it. I mean, I guess the advantage that Rand Paul has as being a senator is that they probably don't have to spend as much time raising money because they got a 6-year term, as opposed to House members who got to raise money as soon as they get reelected because it's only up in 2 years. But yeah, there's a massive level of incompetency, but then there are those that know. And most of those that know are the former Goldman Sachs alumni who are basically right now, like Tim Geithner, Hank Paulson. You know, most of the guys running the show economically in government are former Goldman Sachs guys. And if you look at all of the central banks in Europe, every single one of them is a Goldman Sachs guy. And what it is, it's like a game of Risk. You move your players into, you know, position your pieces. You think 7 moves ahead. And then you topple the whole thing and checkmate. And that's what they're working on. It's a global coup, a global takeover that's done invisibly and silently. Now, there is going to be some visible fallout from this. You're seeing it now in Greece. You're seeing it in Spain. You're seeing it in Mexico. You might see it in some places here in the U.S. down the road. But they're edging forward towards this. The only problem is for them is that the mechanisms for them to do this takeover here in this country are not there, because we still have a constitution, we still have 50 state governments, and we still have some people like us who know what's going on. The problem is that if your masses don't wake up to it, you won't have the momentum. And the momentum that you need is 3% of the population truly active, another third that's in support and sympathetic, because the other two-thirds won't matter. Third of them don't care, don't know what's going on, and would never be involved anyway. And there's probably, you know, a good third that is in favor of a globalist economic system, because that causes, you know, creates jobs for the Wall Street guys, the accountants, the bean counters, the defense contractors, and so on and so forth. So, you know, that's the way you got to look at it. But you know, think about it this way: it is an honor and a privilege to be here at this time for essentially what is possibly the third American war for independence. But it's not following the guns this time.
Absolutely, Rex. And look, the thing is, okay, yeah, it looks bad, right? But a lot of the badness is rhetorical. But the badness really is because people don't realize what's going on. They don't realize what's actually happening to the country. And they're voting basically on impulse and without understanding of what's happening. It's never too late to do the right thing. So just start convincing people we have to do the right thing. Move away from transferring all your power and authority to the state. That's not the solution to your problem. That only creates a dictatorship. And I don't remember anybody ever talking about how great dictatorship is. People try to get out of them all the time. That's why a lot of people are coming here. They're trying to get out of their dictatorship. And if you keep transferring every problem to the federal government to find a solution, they will. And that solution will involve you paying more money and them getting more power until they have all the money and all the power, and you don't. That's the problem. And the essence of the liberty movement is to look at that writ large and understand that you can't solve a problem of a government out of control by giving it more money and giving it more power. You need to devolve power, federalize it back to the states, to the locality, because you in your neighborhood and in your city, you know what's going on and you know what's wrong and you know what needs to be fixed, and the power distance is less. You could actually meet those people. You could be voting for people for office that you actually personally know, rather than someone else has told you about. That's how you start fixing these things.
Yes, absolutely. And as we watch this game unfold, we're about to lose our live audience, but that's okay. You can check us out in archive. As this game of the fiscal cliff Klavan unfolds, keep in mind several things. Number one, the fiscal cliff is a fabrication, and we're told it's a fabrication of the left, which I would tend to agree with. Newt Gingrich said it pretty clearly. This is a fabrication of the left. But that left is not Barack Obama and the Democrats. This fiscal cliff is a fabrication of the left, rhino infiltration in the Republican Party, because they set this crap up more than a decade ago. They had 5 years to fix it, and they didn't. And then they could have still fixed it, and then Obama got in, and they didn't fix it because they want this game to happen with every election cycle, which is why they keep passing these continuing resolutions for the budget, and why they keep pushing this thing out every 2 years, because that falls right into the election cycle. And I suspect we won't be seeing a debt ceiling debate next year, because I strongly believe that part of the deal to save us from the fiscal cliff will be that they'll probably bump up the debt ceiling another $2 trillion, and they might actually put in a provision to eliminate any future debt ceiling conversations by taking the debt ceiling discussion out of Congress. And once again,
what?
Congress cannot abdicate the right, the duty, and the constitutional requirement to manage the debt, to manage the purse, including the coin. The Federal Reserve is illegal, the 17th Amendment is wrong, the 16th Amendment is illegal, and you watch. They've done those things in the past, and we let them get away with it. I suspect that in this deal, to avoid the fiscal cliff, they're going to give the executive branch, the Treasury, and basically the Federal Reserve, the power to borrow at will without congressional discussion.
Well, that's when you pay the tax, because no tax can be prosecuted and no tax can be litigated until it's been paid. So the government created that because they want their money first, and then you sue us and see if you could get it back, because we've already spent it. But once you get stuck paying a tax like that, that's when you go litigate the tax, because it's unconstitutional. The executive branch does not have the power in the Constitution to do these things. And then you bring it up to the Supreme Court and get them to decide.
Yep.
And if
and
they decide, you know, positively, well, let me tell you, you're pretty much screwed. At that point, it's pretty much over, because now you have a land of people who are uneducated about what their own Constitution stands for. They've been taught it stands for racism and all this other kind of crap, and it's explicitly an anti-racist, anti-slavery document. But, you know, people have been convinced of that, and they'll turn their back on it. You know what? If liberty goes away, it goes away for a long time, because it happened in ancient Rome. And when it went away in ancient Rome and they replaced the Republic with the Empire, it didn't come back for 2,000 years. So you got work to do.
Yeah, and the thing to keep in mind is, unlike Rome, we have a written constitution that we can refer to. We have the analysis.
Anyway.
We have analysis of the Constitution written by those men at that time, and we have dictionaries and other reference documents to know specifically what they meant by the word that they used at the time, which may not mean the same thing today. So we have that. And keep in mind, we do have a system of federalism. It is not being applied. It is being overrun. The federal government is doing a lot of things it cannot and should not be doing, and we're allowing it. However, let them go too far. Let them take it over this, quote, fiscal cliff, okay? Let all the Cliff Klavans talk about, as experts, about things that they have no understanding of. And you watch, because when it collapses, keep in mind two things. One, money is not wealth. Our money is debt. Wealth is the natural resources, the hard work and the talent of the American people, our entrepreneurs, our laborers, and those true capitalists who are investing in real companies. And we have more resources here in this country than anywhere else in the world. We have more liquid natural gas, more oil, more food growing capacity. We have the resources, we have the wealth, and we have 50 governments with a National Guard. We have local police forces. All of these things can and will continue to function, even if Washington, D.C. were to disappear off the face of the earth. But only if you understand that. Only if you are not dependent and reliant on the federal Leviathan, And only if you know your sheriff, you know your local representatives, and you get in touch with them and get them to start doing their jobs. And it's a both and, like I said before. It's not only about reforming the Republican Party and getting rid of the rhinos and making it conservative, but also strengthening the alternate conservative parties. Because if you ever want to avoid being back here again where you have a liberal, progressive, corporatist infiltration in your conservative party, you need to have another ballast outside of the GOP to hold them account to conservatism. That's probably the Constitution Party, maybe the Libertarian Party, maybe both. But you also have to remember that as you tackle the situation from the top by going after your senators, your congressmen, and the White House, you do the pressure from below by bolstering your local representatives, your sheriffs, your grand juries, and even your governor. And if your governor is complying with Obama's extra-constitutional crap, get rid of him or her and put in a governor who will nullify with his legislature. Because it's your country, it's up to you, and you shouldn't be afraid. They're trying to put fear into you that, you know, because Obama got reelected, the country's over. Because of the fiscal cliff, we're all going to die. And the Maya calendar says that on 12/21/2012, the world will end. Calm down. That's not going to happen. We're going to be here for Christmas. We're going to be here in January. The world is not going to end. The road ahead may not be pretty, but it is the opportunity to stand up and to be like our founding fathers and reestablish what they gave us and fight for liberty.
Amen.
Tex, you got it? Tex, you got anything to close with?
Yeah, well, I don't know. You laid a lot on me there at the end with the whole, you know, Mayan thing. And man, I hate that thing so much. I mean, I remember Y2K. I mean, talk about the fleecing of America. Okay, so 2 or 3 weeks before the actual turn of the new year, and so in 1999, like December 15th-ish, something like that, there's a group of Russians coming up to Congress, sending letters stating that if they did not receive X number of billions in the next 3 weeks, they would be unable to deal with the Y2K problem, and they couldn't ensure the security of their nuclear missiles and all this kind of stuff. I mean, you know, I don't think they got the money, but, you know, how much money did we spend on this nonsensical thing that was never going to happen, right? Like, oh, yeah, back on the program 4chan, they only used, you know, 2 digits for the year. Okay, that's not actually very hard to fix. It's, you know, it's fairly easy. And, you know, I mean, I have some basic programming skills. And, you know, the hardest part is finding where in the code that would be. But, you know, with modern computer programs that we just search that out, you can figure out where it is. Because there's a command for the date in Fortran, for God's sakes. You can't have a date and not have it set up as being one of these variables. So you just search for one of those variables, like, hey, and then you go fix it. Anyway, but so once again, we shit dollars on the world, your tax dollars, to go fix a problem that didn't really exist in the first place.
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know if that's a conclusion, but I'm just.
No, that's a good conclusion, and you're bringing that up is very valid. I mean, you know what? This fiscal cliff is just like Cliff Clavin. It's a fictitious character. By the way, the guy that created Cliff Clavin and played him on Cheers for all those years, John Ratzenberger, he's a sharp guy, and he knows what's going on, and he keeps talking about skilled labor and manufacturing, and he's telling you that the biggest problem that you've got is one day the shit's not going to get piped out of your house and water's not going to flow in and you're going to need to call a plumber, and there won't be any because we don't train people to do real work like that anymore. And it's time to get back in touch with doing real work making things.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with blue collar except the unions that have destroyed it.
Right.
Exactly, because if you become blue collar, you become basically a member of the union plantation. You know, I know people who work for UPS, and they had a big strike back in, what year was that, 94, 93, something like that?
96, 97, actually, I think.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, it was later. So they had a huge strike, and he had just got a job for UPS and everything, and he needed the money, right? So, you know, they said, oh, okay, we're all going to walk up the job and all this kind of stuff. He's like, you know, look, I got a family. I don't have time for all this stuff. I'm happy. I just took the job like 3 months ago. I was happy with the salary, and so I want to go to work. And they slashed all the tires on the car. And fucking act of terrorism. You know,
scab.
Against them. And you know what? Do you think he can go sue those people? Do you think the police are going to investigate any of that? No, they get a pass. You know why? It's a crook. That's why it's criminal activity that's legal now.
Yeah, I wanted to bring back a comment, John Ratzenberger. You know, some of the actors that have played you know, stupid people or simple people are really some of the more intelligent ones that are in the trade. Anybody remember Carol Wayne, who used to be Johnny Carson's bimbo? You know, once a month bimbo. Carol Wayne.
Yeah, I remember Johnny Carson. I don't remember her.
Well, Carol Wayne, tall, blonde bombshell. You know, well endowed. She was actually in Mensa. She's got a 160 plus IQ. It's just amazing, you know, to see that kind of pretend and actually have you know, that kind of sparks behind it. Anyway, I'll leave it with that. I just want to mention.
I mean, Paul, that's precisely why, you know, when we were talking, you know, Fiscal Cliff Clavin came to mind. One, because I know Ratzenberger. He's a very sharp guy. He's very spot on about these things. Two, Ratzenberger actually originally tried out for the role of Norm, which George Wendt actually got, and then Ratzenberger suddenly decided to pitch the Cliff Clavin character, who was originally some other job, some other government job, and they decided to make him a mailman. But it just occurred to me that all this talk of the fiscal cliff is just like those conversations Cliff Clavin had on Cheers. You know, he's a know-it-all about everything and knows next to dick about anything. And there was that one episode where he was on Jeopardy, and all the categories were right up his alley. It was like mail, stamps, celibacy, your mother. And he won $22,000, and then in the final Jeopardy, he was like, you know, $20,000 ahead of his nearest opponent, but he bets it all. And they named three actors original names, and they were supposed to guess what their Hollywood screen names were. And his answer was, who are three people that have never been in my kitchen? And he bet the whole boat, and he lost. And that's the kind of fiscal cliff we're heading towards. It's a made-up, foolish canard like Tex bringing up Y2K, which was complete crap, and just like the Maya calendar, which merely just resets on 12/21/2012. It doesn't mean anything about anything else. It's just the calendar resets, just like Y2K, we reset. So the fiscal cliff is the same thing. So what we have to learn to do is not give in to this fear, not give in to this rhetoric, not let them win the game by making it sound like they're doing something real, when in fact all they're doing is preparing for possibly the most dastardly deal we've ever seen that's already in the works, and it's just a matter of rhetorical unfolding right now. And we've got to hit them every single day and replace them. Because the fact is that the fiscal cliff is, so long as your money is backed by nothing and you're not manufacturing anything and you have a corporatist control over every aspect of every economic activity in the country, that's the real fiscal cliff. And that's one that will be absolutely and totally devastating unless you happen to be a selected political constituency or attached to political patronage by some kind of privilege. That's not the United States of America. That's not the way that we built this country. It is certainly the way that we'll take it down unless we stop it. It's up to each and every one of you. So get involved. Call your senators, call your congressmen, call the White House, and get others informed and educated, and tell them to kill their television and turn it off and listen to Tex and Rex. We'll be back next Sunday for another dose of irreverent, relevant, and radioactive conservatism with a bite. For this week, this is Tex and Rex signing off.
The flames of liberty will never die.
I don't care, I'm still free. You can't take the sky from me. Take me out to the black. Tell them I ain't coming back. Burn the land and boil the sea. You can't take the sky from me. found serenity. But you can't take the sky from me.